Welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for August 26, 2012. Koyo Kubota here. So glad you joined us. Well. Coming to the end of August. Summer is flying by. Well, I'm going to begin with our guest today to give us the Dharma glimpse. And this is Andy Royal of New Jersey. He was part of our Lay Minister 4 group. So without further ado, Andy Royal Sensei.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's a hectic day for me. I decided last night to go back to England with my daughter and her family, in part to help and in part because a very dear friend who's very, very ill, and she may have surgery in the week, so I thought I would take advantage of trying to go and see her. But we need to stick to our other routines. So during the last couple of weeks and thinking about issues for this morning's discussion, I wrote down several notes. So this will seem a little bit more like an olio than a coherent serving of a single dish, but let's see where it takes it. One of my ahas of late was, thank goodness for mosquitoes. I had shoulder surgery a couple of months ago, but still have frequent aches and pains, including during my morning meditations. A few days ago, I was walking the dogs around the house before settling down, and of course, a mosquito bite started to drive me to distraction while sitting. I admit I failed to put it in its place. I did for a while, and I've done it before, but this time, a quick scratch just solved that feeling. And then I laughed out loud. During all the time I was focused on the itching, I wasn't paying any attention to the pain in my shoulder. So the mosquito was my pain reducer for that period of time. So I thanked the little bug and the short relief it provided. These past 8 or 9 weeks have been a constant lesson in putting pain into perspective. But a perspective does not lend itself to wordy descriptions. Rather, I've been working on what I can do while aware of the various levels of pain at each moment. Lots to learn. Another prime thought is one that we'll have to put much more effort into converting from an idea into long-term action. Apart and away from the daily interactions with people, I am aware of the following. Today is not a good day to convince other people of the rightness of my views. Tomorrow isn't looking any better. I may be right that other people's actions are wrong, but is today, now, the time to let them know? Will tomorrow be any more conducive? Making mistakes is no big deal. We're only human. But quickly admitting to have made a mistake, why is that so much harder? It is so hard, in fact, that I'm sure we often convince ourselves that we have not made a mistake. For others, doing this would be wrong. But for me, it is okay. I have my reasons, after all. So who is the biggest fool when we fool ourselves? I've been drawn to a little passage noted by Stephen Batchelor, which resonates with my behavioral psychology training. He says it's from the Pali text, I may not be pronouncing this properly, Udana Titha Sutta. And at the end, near the end, it says, this humankind is attached to self-production or holds to other production. Those who have not understood this have not seen it as a dart. The one who sees, having drawn out the dart, does not think, I am the agent, nor thinks, another is the agent. So, what we do is the result of conditions and contingencies. Thinking of our own agency is a result of the language we've come to learn to use, not the discovery of something real within. That seems to be what the Buddha says over and over. Self-generating I is an illusion, although one virtually impossible to recognize. I think in part that is why devoting ourselves to others is one key way of minimizing our self-centered orientation. So perhaps these issues all relate to finding the proper balance between I and others. There is no awareness of I until there is an awareness of others. But once that distinction is made, I vote for I. As a little note also, I'll be leading a study group talking about Stephen Batchelor's book, Living with the Devil, and Sensei Batchelor's also graciously said that he would talk to our group on September 29th. I know it's a Saturday versus a Sunday, and it'll be 7 p.m. in France, so I will get everybody exact information on how to join us for that hopefully very interesting conversation. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much. I was thinking about, because I was listening to the Dharma Glimpse, several themes or topics were mentioned about making mistakes, about oneself versus others, and I'm thinking in the context of athletics, I guess, for several reasons. One is that, I might have mentioned this before, but Andy is, our paths crossed several decades ago. He was a graduate student at North Carolina, and I was teaching there, and graduate students and faculty sometimes, sometimes quite often, we played football and basketball. On the weekends or even in intramural league games. And I know that Andy mentioned his shoulder surgery. And, I know age and pain is a constant reality, but old athletes, we don't go away, gradually fades, but sometimes we're still there. And so I was thinking about athletics, and because of the recent Olympics, what a pleasure it is to see people exerting to the utmost, and seeing what is possible. And there's all kinds of aspects involved when we see athletics. I think those themes of mistakes and I versus others is very prominent in athletics. One aspect of athletics is, of course, that there's winners and losers. But there are different layers, aren't there? There's some things like personal bests, giving one's all, regardless of the outcome. and often we know that an athlete has engaged in tremendous dedication, practice, effort, and at the same time, the athlete is aware of coaches, teammates, role models, parents, and I think that we need to really, realize or have the right understanding of this aspect in ourselves and use the sports and athletics as a good gate or door in which we could see ourselves in all kinds of activities that regards effort, that regards accomplishing something that involves how we see ourselves in an interconnected world. We need to broaden and deepen our right understanding, okay, of ourselves and in the world and the reality of the world. Well, I had a nice insight watching the Olympics, and this was, right after the women's 4x100 relay. I had just turned the TV on, and they were showing the highlights. And the women, they set a world record, U.S. women, and they were showing the, as they showed the highlights, they showed, interestingly, they showed the, when the baton was passed from one runner to the other, next runner. And that's a crucial aspect, because in the past Olympics, the women's relay team, when they were passing the baton, they dropped it. And they lost. Now, in the present highlights, they were showing this, and all the passes were good, and they were interviewing the runners, and the anchor leg was run by one of the ladies, and that Carmelita Jeter, and she was exulting in their team victory and being interviewed, and she said, one thing she said was, you know, everybody, they thought that we would drop that baton. They were waiting for us to drop that baton, but we didn't, and we made it. And right then, that comment flashed on me as, you see, even past failure, okay, in this case, the mistakes made by the previous Olympics team, women's team, you know, this is 4 years earlier, was on the mind of these runners. Don't, we better not mess up. You have to be extra careful when we pass that baton. That past failure is a part of the present success. We normally would not think about that, you know. You would think about all the positive or the things that contributed to the present success, not realizing that even past failures, and in this case, not even of oneself, part of one's own personal experience, but past teams' failures. Failures are integral part of success. This is what I think we might call really right understanding of the reality of causes and effects, self-efficacy, the nature of the world. The Japanese call it in-men, causes and conditions, or tak-kan, Japanese word for wide perspective, not just the narrow, you know, I did it. It's the suchness. It's the reality of life. And as I thought about this, you know, this is where one time I gave a invocation. It was at an organizational event in Chicago, an organization that was honoring Phil Jackson for his humanitarian work. And I was given the invocation for this event. And since it was Phil Jackson, Chicago Bulls basketball coach, I just made a comment about rebounding. That, you know, we always stress say in basketball, making the basket. Everything's geared about the success of scoring and putting that round sphere into the basket. But all coaches, they really stress the importance of rebounding. When the other team, or even your team, when the shot is missed, you got to get that rebound. You get the rebound when the other team misses so that they don't get a second chance. And if it's your team that missed, if you get that rebound and you get a second chance, rebounding is very important. Okay. And, of course, it's very important in life, too. I was also then thinking, my thoughts went on to other sports, and I was thinking about boxing. I was thinking about Muhammad Ali, when I'm, you know, my favorite sports figures. He even transcends the sport of boxing. You know, he's such a figure. But I remember one time he was talking about an upcoming fight, and he was talking about his opponent, and he said, you know, my opponent has never been knocked down. He's never really been even hurt, hit with a good punch. And see, I have, see. And a boxer really has to know how to handle it when he's... he's hit and hurt, because if you don't have that experience and you get hurt, you're just in a shock, and it's easy to panic. You don't know what to do because, as he put it, you've never been in that room before. And a good boxer, an experienced boxer, when they get hurt, they get caught by a good punch, they have to hang on, know how to defend and avoid getting, you know, because when you hurt the other, when you're boxing and you hurt your opponent and he's in trouble, you got to finish him off, you know. You got to try to finish him off. And, of course, for the opponent, if it's you, then you got to try to weather that storm. And an important part of that is you can't panic, okay? And you have to be able to slip and slide and hang on, and okay. But as Ali said, this guy, if you've never been in that room, okay, you really don't know. There's nothing like experience. See, I've been in that room before, so if it happens, then you don't have to panic. Okay, you can weather the storm. So it's crucial. What to do and not panic. And the same thing, it reminds me of when you rebound. Some great rebounders like Bill Russell of the Celtics and so forth, he said when he goes up for a rebound, he could see the laces on the ball. He could read what's written on that ball as he's going up for that rebound. In other words, things slow down. It's not a blur fast. And even though the game itself is fast, inside there's a calm center right in the midst of hectic activity. Okay. And this is one of the sort of the definitions in sports about the game has slowed down. In football or whatever, you know, the ball is hiked and everything's happening real fast. But when you experience the sense of time, everything, when the game slows down, then that's when the great athletes can make things look easy. And in life, too. Because... when whatever situation might be involved in life, it might be a very hectic time. Okay. something has gone wrong. Okay. But if you have the calm center, okay, or like John Wooden used to say, make haste slowly. So, this is what I was thinking about in terms of today's message, and that's all for today's broadcast. Until next time, keep going, and have a beautiful day, whether filled with both successes and failures, big and little, because it's all beautiful. Thank you.